You're listening to The Exchange here on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. The House last week passed a $19 billion disaster aid bill that would deliver long-sought relief to farmers, victims of hurricanes and floods, and also it would go to rebuild military bases as Democrats try to dislodge the legislation from a Senate logjam over aid to hurricane-slammed Puerto Rico. Today, we hear about efforts by the federal government, the Air National Guard, and a local solar power vendor to help those devastated by a hurricane in Puerto Rico. The Air National Guard 185th Refueling Wing in Sioux City recently provided medical care to people in Puerto Rico. Senior Master Sergeant Vincent DeGroot serves as a public affairs superintendent, and he traveled to Puerto Rico to document that mission.
We started at the end of April, and then we were home by the 8th of May. It involved primarily teams from the medical clinic. Same branches of service, but it was active duty reserve components, Air National Guard, Army National Guard, Marine Corps Reserve, active duty Army, Air Force, all the other branches as well. So it was primarily the optometrists, dental, and medical providers that were part of the exercise, where they're providing no-cost care for people in Puerto Rico, but the program is nationwide within the United States, to areas that are underserved. We had a little over 50 people from this unit. We were the 185th was the lead unit, which was quite unique. They kind of ran the whole show, but there's a lot of responsibility that came with that as well. Overseeing the activities and actions of about 500 people total. And then we also had them spread out geographically to six different locations throughout the region of Puerto Rico where they were working. It's a much needed a service that was being provided with a no-cost care. The idea of the program is also to provide the training for the medical professionals there. So that part I got to see every day, and it was being done flawlessly. It was pretty amazing, to see the attitudes of the people that were doing the care as well. People who were getting eyeglasses that have never had glasses before in some remote areas, but also in some of the metropolitan areas as well.
While in Puerto Rico, DeGroot interviewed Master Sergeant Adam Wright. Wright works as a full-time firefighter EMT in Sioux City, and he's a 20-year veteran of the Air Force. Wright also took part in the Innovative Readiness Training Program.
Very busy. It's one patient after another, clean up, next patient, and it's from the beginning of the day to the end of the day. We have patients waiting at the door when we come in the morning. So the people around here, it's a needed resource for them. I really enjoy the IRT program. It gives us a chance to train and get a little deeper into our career fields. And I think it's a great community outreach program for them as well. The no-cost care, and then the fact that, we're getting our training, they're getting services as well. And, we're helping people. They're giving hugs afterwards because they're just really appreciative. Kids are getting glasses. They're able to see better. They didn't realize what they were missing. So it's kind of a close to the heart almost. So it's been pretty good.
You can check out our website for a link to the video from the 185th Refueling Wing and their work in Puerto Rico. The 185th is also taking part in another mission in Puerto Rico. Civil engineers with the unit are working to remodel a school for disabled children. Woodbury County was declared a federal disaster area after flooding in March. FEMA showed up in the aftermath to assist with homeowners and businesses. One person on the forefront of that effort shared her story with Siouxland Public Media's Sheila Brummer.
Flooding early this spring dominated the news headlines in Siouxland.
Federal officials are setting up shop in town to provide help to those in need.
FEMA, along FEMA's with spokesperson Rosaveth Ray Berrios, arrived on the scene.
They will need some important documents like social security number.
Rosaveth Ray Berrios, who likes to be called simply Rosie, keeps the media and the public up to date on developments.
Most of these disasters are between 3 months or 7 months each one. So majorly I am out of my home most of the whole year.
Rosie knows firsthand the devastating impact of natural disaster. Puerto Rico is her home.
2017 was a very difficult year for the island. We have two hurricanes. First one was Irma. Then came Maria. There's three tornadoes around. So that makes the hurricane stronger. And there was houses in the center of the island, they're gone.
Rosie considers herself lucky. Her family and friends survived. And since her home runs on solar energy, she didn't lose power like others did for months.
My home became a disaster recovery family center.
As Rosie's relatives stayed at her home, she left to help strangers.
I have 20 soldiers, army soldiers, with me. It was very hard. There was a lot of trees on the road. There was no power. There was no gas.
Rosie has spent a dozen years working for FEMA, but her life before the government agency brought even more excitement and intrigue. At age 19, she trained as a rescuer, eventually leading teams into Mexico and Chile in the aftermath of earthquakes. She then ended up with college degrees in photography and sound engineering. 15 years in the film industry included doing sound effects for some high-profile movies.
The world's most famous secret agent is back.
Her name's Bond. James Bond.
It was eventually her work behind the camera as a professional photographer that changed the focus of her life.
I am the eye for everybody. That's my mission.
FEMA first hired Rosie to visually document the recovery process of communities literally torn apart by Mother Nature.
My first assignment was Joplin, Missouri tornado, which is in 2011. That was my first assignment out of Puerto Rico, because I started in Puerto Rico with FEMA. And that was really sad. And it was very, that impacted me a lot. And seeing that devastation, but now seeing Joplin, how beautiful it is, how it's emerged from that devastation to something so beautiful, it's made me feel so happy.
Since Joplin, Rosie's responded to 21 disasters all across the U.S., also lending her expertise in translating languages. The work can be long and lonely. What are your impressions of this area?
Well, my impressions of this area is a very peaceful. Everybody's like relaxed. So it's very blessing to have.
Another blessing? The addition of another FEMA team member.
Hi, my name is Luis Santos. I'm the Public Information Officer for the Small Business Administration Office of the Disaster Assistance.
Luis Santos also comes from Puerto Rico.
You know, finally I can talk to someone that I can relate to.
Excited, like, you know, having somebody that I can speak in my own language and my culture.
Luis recently joined FEMA after a career in the business side of the music industry in Miami. La luna es la luz que brilla ante mí. He returned home to care for a sick relative. 3 years later, Hurricane Maria.
I was one of the people in the street trying to every day hustling for water, 12 hours. Or next day then will be for gas, 12 more hours.
In his quest for more assistance, Luis found FEMA.
And when I became aware of that, I say, like, you know what? This is my mission. I'll be here 7 months on the road. I miss my island. I miss the beaches over there. I miss my family. But even though I'm sacrificing 7 months of my life, and I feel like really grateful that life has given me this opportunity and God, you know, to do this mission and walk every day.
Before coming to Iowa, Luis supported victims of flooding in Arizona and the wildfires in California.
You got to be ready to pack and go.
And he finds the same positive experience as Rosie on this latest assignment.
All the people that I met in Iowa, they liked, you know, to work. They like to work here. It's like Puerto Rico. They like to rebuild themselves.
Rosie and Luis come from the same world. Both possess a kind, warm spirit for reaching out to others with all backgrounds. Do you guys think you'll keep in contact after this experience?
Of course, yes.
Definitely.
Together.
Yeah.
For Siouxland Public Media News, I'm Sheila Brummer.
Rossi left Sioux City today to return to Puerto Rico for some time off before her next assignment. Luis is now working with FEMA in southeast Iowa. Even though the two are candid about their work and homeland, they politely refuse to comment on the U.S. response in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria. However, they do want to remind people that the deadline for filing for assistance in Woodbury County and other counties in the federal disaster area has been extended until July 1st. And to lend a hand in Southwest Iowa, musicians from across the region are lending their talents to a benefit concert on Friday night. The proceeds will go to the victims of this spring's Missouri River flooding. The Shamrock Theater in the Southwest Iowa town of Imogen is hosting Floodstock 2019 Friday night. Singer-songwriter George McCargill of Imogen is helping to organize the event. Performers at the concert include McCargill, Omaha recording artists Jocelyn and Jeff Slater, and the Union County Band. Free will donations will be collected. For those who can't attend, donations can also be left at any Bank Iowa location. Listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. When Hurricane Maria hit Puerto Rico, counted amongst the devastation was the power grid. As there wasn't money to pay for an emergency rebuilding of the system, survivors were left helpless and essential services languished offline, including many schools. One school, however, found help from a farmer in Iowa. This is the story of how Dolph Ivner found his way to Puerto Rico.
Yeah, we're in the lee of the solar panels.
This is Dolph Ivner, owner of Suncrate Energy.
Birds love solar panel racks for nests.
We are in a small solar panel infrastructure behind an apartment complex near where Sioux City begins to blur into rural living. As well as owning Suncrate Energy and Hog Power Energy, Dolph farms and runs a construction company. He identifies as a hog farmer.
I find solar panels and corn planters. They each have a special place. Birds love them.
Hello.
This is Melody.
Melody in Gobrick.
Melody lives about 2,500 miles from the shade of the solar panels Dolph and I stood in.
Oh, you're in Iowa. Oh, well, I was born in Iowa also.
Our both being Iowans was pure coincidence. Originally from Osage, Melody moved to Puerto Rico with her husband 40 years ago. I was on one side of a phone call to the S.U. Manuel Ortiz School in Yabacoa, Puerto Rico, and somebody handed her the other side. Her granddaughter is a student at the school. My interest in the school goes back to Dolph, and his interest goes back to Hurricane Maria, an Atlantic hurricane whose winds reached 175 miles per hour and caused the deaths of over 3,000 people in Puerto Rico. For the survivors, it's been a difficult recovery.
Oh, trees everywhere. Trees, power lines, poles. It was really a mess. And thanks to the teachers and some of the parents, well, every day they'd come and pick up and try to get things back in order so that the school could go ahead and be opened again as soon as possible.
But then a road to the school collapsed, preventing the school's reopening and, as it turns out, threatening a permanent closure.
When we chose that school was on the chopping block for consolidation. And when we said, hey, we want to do this school, they said, all right, well, that school can stay.
The public school system in Puerto Rico was under stress before Hurricane Maria struck in 2017. The New York Times reported that in 2016, 167 schools had been shuttered. Following the hurricane, 265 more were closed. Lack of funding and emigration from the island have put pressure on the system, as have political pushes for privatization and waivers, forcing consolidation. Though rural towns in Iowa and beyond haven't altogether suffered a natural disaster as has Puerto Rico, waning populations and funding challenges have forced consolidation in the countryside. For Dolph, who intentionally works with solar power to provide a degree of independence to folks in rural parts of the world, school consolidation represents a loss of an ideal.
You know, when you drive through every small town in Iowa, you look at the school and it's the Schleghorn, you know, go down the list of five towns in one. And the town that didn't get the school, kind of just, you know, kind of drying up.
Behind the saving of the school is another story.
Because I'm a hog farmer in Iowa, right? Hog farmer from Iowa calls up and says, hey, I want to do this, right?
Before there was Suncrate Energy, there was Hog Power Energy.
I came up with this idea, like, for hog confinement.
A self-contained solar system, panels, battery, and all the parts needed, all in a shipping container. In addition to the parts, the box contains an idea that microgrids, grids made up of smaller, smart sources of electricity that can connect to larger traditional grids, can reshape rural life. As Dolph argues, if you can cut your energy costs, whether those costs that you find on your utility bill or those costs to transportation once you implement electric vehicles, then
all of a sudden, the pull to drive to move to town became less of a pull.
When Hurricane Maria struck, the vision of solar systems packaged in shipping containers suddenly could be seen in a new context, not just near hog confinements in Iowa, but near schools in Puerto Rico. But how does a
hugger from Iowa
get in touch with the Secretary of Education in Puerto Rico?
Everything is created through personal relationships. I made a personal relationship with a man at Black and Veatch out of Kansas City. I accomplished all kinds of tasks for them to prove I was competent. And then they opened their Rolodex of numbers. And one of their they are the engineering company of choice for Tesla for installing all of the supercharging stations around the United States.
So?
Black and Veatch called.
Hello.
The Secretary of Education in Puerto Rico. And with their name and reputation, in addition to Tesla's and to Canadian Solar's, both of whom partnered with Dolph for this project.
That then perks up the Secretary of Education. And she's like, yeah, we've got the biggest players in the world coming to help our little school in, you know, in Yabucoa, Puerto Rico.
What made Yabucoa, Puerto Rico a good candidate for this microgrid technology, making major companies like Black & Veatch and Tesla interested in Dolph's idea, was, in part, the insolvency of Puerto Rico's utility. Most utilities faced with disaster in the United States can rely on the Mutual Assistance Program, a voluntary agreement amongst utilities that those not affected by a disaster will bring equipment and workers to the impacted area to quickly rebuild the damaged grid and restore power, work for which the rebuilt utility and its ratepayers will pay for in time. Puerto Rico didn't appear to have the resources to pay the utilities who helped, which has led to a series of governmental contracts which have raised concerns of nepotism and unfair dealings. That and
these large engineering companies, their bread and butter has been huge, massive projects. Like, you know, a coal-fired plant that is $1 billion, takes 4 years to build it, right? I mean, those are awesome projects, and those projects are starting to go away.
The United States Energy Information Administration estimates that to build a 650 megawatt coal-fired power plant with 30% carbon sequestration that will go online in 2021, the cost could be $3.3 billion. To build enough solar plants with fixed panels to create the same amount of power, it would be $1.2 billion. And it would go online in 2019, giving solar an advantage. And with Tesla and companies like Tesla ramping up production of batteries, batteries that can communicate when networked, the ability to create and store power, then use it when needed, is here. Dolph's SunCrate, or Hog Power Box, proves that smart microgrids can supplement major grids. The proof is being shown every day at a school in Yabucoa, Puerto Rico. But before that box began proving the idea, it had to be set up. After months of development and building, trial and error, finally having the crate ready to go, Dolph ran into difficulties shipping it to Puerto Rico.
That took me 6 weeks. 6 weeks of my life.
He would call one company and explain that he owned the shipping container.
And they'd be like, yeah, no problem.
And then they'd say, wait a second.
What do you mean your shipping container?
We use our shipping container.
I thought we had this conversation.
But finally, Dolph found
Juan Carlos.
And within 24 hours, his crate was on its way to Puerto Rico. Once there, nothing went smoothly, but Dolph and his team persisted, setting up the equipment, training teachers and administrators on how to use it, racing against the clock as the Secretary of Education, as well as folks from Tesla and the other companies, were coming down to see the battery go online, giving life back to a school that had been closed for a traumatic year.
This task had to be completed when that limo, when that black Suburban rolled in.
But the work was bringing them right up to that time. And then, once done, the battery had to charge. For the system to be fully utilized, the battery must be fully charged. But the Suburban has arrived, speeches are being given.
And literally, as the Secretary of Education called my name, Dolph, come up and tell us about it, the screen blinked. And right, I have this big flat screen TV that shows the schematic on the battery charge, and it just flashes 100%, and it was like, boom, and it was just like, oh, like, don't stand next to me because lightning could strike me, because man, I got the hot hand. So I just walked up there and we turned, okay, turn it off, and you kill it, and none of the lights go down, and the school's still running, and the air conditioners are humming, and it's just like, yep, yeah, we totally knew this would happen all the time. We had it all. This is great in these microgrids, you know? And so it's just, you know, it was just, we got really lucky.
Dolph stayed in touch with the folks at the school and can view the workings of the crate on his phone. The kids haven't had to be sent home for loss of power, even as Puerto Rico continues to struggle with its macrogrid. And folks like Melody, who see this technology at work every day, are now thinking anew.
I am looking forward to doing the same thing with my home. I'm all for clean energy.
For Siouxland Public Media, I'm Mark Munger.
Listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. Well, we've talked a lot about floods so far in the program, and now we're going to talk about fire. Plumes of smoke rising above fields is a common sight driving down the highways, one that doesn't cause concern. When the prairies were untamed grass, smoke meant something else. Jim Scopp recalls a fire that began long ago and still burns in memory. This story describes the loss of children to a disaster.
When really no more can be said. Sunday, October 15, we went to church. The wind was then blowing wildly, but this became worse further along in the day. When we got out of church, we saw smoke in the distance because the prairie was on fire. It's November 1871. And Harmon Jan Tassell, a homesteader from Lancaster County, Nebraska, is riding home to the old country from a sod house amid grasslands he and his family back home could never have imagined, an immense, roiling sea of grass. All that grass, he tells them, is still unoccupied, he might as well have said untamed. He's among those trying to tame the frontier, which is part of the reason Tassell's letter home begins with a record of their harvest. It is this year quite good, he writes, and then recites particulars. Corn is very good. Of this we should, I believe, have 800 or 900 bushels. Things go well in America. Not until the end does he tell his family about the prairie fire. When the grass is high and dry, he says, it can stir up a big blaze. The old country relatives had no idea. It can burn for miles. Nebraska, they know, is unimaginably huge. He's probably sitting in a sod house, a lamp beside him as he tries to determine how to relate the horror. So I wanted to say, he says, almost as if he's lost track. He hasn't. It's just very hard. So what I wanted to say, that when we got out of church, we saw the fire. Story must be told. Another man from church saw the fire was not far from his soddy. He had been in church with his wife and two children, but three were home, a girl of 11 or 12, one of 8, and another of 5 or 6. That man ran as quickly as he could, but his house was entirely in ashes. Nothing could have prepared Harmon Tassell for what happened to a neighbor that Sabbath morning in a prairie fire he and the rest of the immigrant homesteaders discovered to be a Holocaust. High standing grain and 4 pigs were all burned, but not the worst, he writes, still hedging, trying to determine how to tell his loved ones what they'd all witnessed after church in the burned grasslands. His neighbor saw something white on the ground and thought it was a calf. But when he came closer, he saw it was his oldest girl lying burned on the ground, and upon investigation, the other two were in the house entirely burned. Thus, he wrote, a tragic situation for that man. And then this. Beloved, the paper is too small to write more. Besides here or anywhere, what more can be said? It's difficult to imagine Harmon Tassell didn't sit there for a moment and read through the letter he'd just written, this time picturing his mother and brother with wives and children, all of them sitting and standing around in a house he knew so thoroughly he could have painted even the pictures on the wall. That last time he went through the letter in his imagination, he watched them read the story he just told, saw their eyes glaze, and listened for their silence. And then I'm guessing he put that letter down, took a breath or two, prayers really, and he went out to the lean-to to milk and to do chores, still shaken and humbled in that vast sea of grass and the scorched fields all around. He returned to what he knew had to be done, as somehow all of us do. Beloved, he'd said, the paper is too small to write more.
Support for Small Wonders on Siouxland Public Media comes from the Daniels Osborne Law Firm in the Ho-Chunk Center in downtown Sioux City, serving the needs of clients in real estate transactions, business formation and guidance, and personal estate planning. More information is available on Facebook or at danielsosborne.com. You're listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. Theater in Siouxland has seen a rebirth in the last 10 years with new theater companies, playwrights, and original plays. Shot in the Dark Productions will present the world premiere of Los Angeles playwright and director Sean Serino's Rue Royale at Morningside College's Klinger Neal Theater Friday, May 31st. It's part of the American Playwrights series. The event will host talent from across the region, and Serino will be directing her play. Rue Royale is the story of Sophie, a recent college graduate who returns home following the news of her father's illness. I talk with Serino and Shot in the Dark Theater's Adam Goncharowski about the play.
And what we're doing is bringing in an American playwright that has a play dealing with the American experience. And with that, we're trying to find new material, new playwrights, bring them in and produce their show and give them a world premiere right here in Sioux City, Iowa.
And that's what Sean is doing here.
Yes. I have a play. My play is called Rue Royale, which takes place in New Orleans, where I'm from. And I've worked with Adam in the past, and he thought of me when they were searching for a play for this season. And it was a great fit. So we decided to work together. It's been a great experience so far.
In this play, it deals a lot with issues in a young woman's life, and mm-hmm. she's got a lot going on. Can you talk a little bit about the story?
Yes. It centers around a young woman named Sophie who has just graduated college and returns to her hometown of New Orleans. And she, when she returns home, she finds out about a looming tragedy in her family. And it's the first time in her life she's ever had to deal with something like that, and her first reaction is to avoid it. So she moves in with her best friend in the French Quarter and ends up going down a path of kind of chaos and self-destruction which she'll have some big decisions to make by the end of the play of how she's going to deal with these family issues she's having and how she's going to move on and move forward from them.
And it deals with a lot of really, you know, gritty issues in life.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. And this, the decisions that a young person has to make for the first time in their lives, it's the most serious thing that's ever happened to her, and it's completely new territory. And it's very confusing and frightening, and it's something that I think a lot of people could relate to.
I suppose people ask you, like, where did you get the idea to do this? Was it someone in your life you knew?
Yes, me. It's loosely based on events in my life. I try to say loosely because, you know, a lot of it is largely from my imagination, but a lot of the characters, particularly the lead character, are based on people from my life, including myself.
When you're writing, how do you decide what to put in, what to leave out, what to add a little more to, add some fiction to, or leave out other things? It seems to me that those are tough decisions.
They are, especially when it's based on true events, quote unquote, because you want to stay true to what happened and to the story, but you also want to make it entertaining and visually interesting for an audience. So a lot of maybe more minor details or things that happened exactly as they did, maybe not quite as compelling for theater. So you want to kind of ramp up, and you might have to exaggerate certain things and you know, also condense the timeline. So it's tricky to strike the balance between what was reality and staying true to that and what's interesting to watch on stage.
As a playwright, when you're sort of going through the, you know, before it's premiered and there are rehearsals and you're working with people, do you ever end up changing parts of the play? Does that ever happen?
Yes, actually it does. That happened last night in rehearsal because each time the staging is different. So that's a factor whenever you're putting up a show, how they, you know, where things are physically on the stage and entrances and exits and where things are placed. So it isn't necessarily the same each time. So as you are going through the play, you have to make adjustments according to the space.
How hard is it to get a play on stage? Not just, you know, a play by anyone, but as a woman and women writing and getting productions on, I hear a lot about the difficulty with that. What's been your experience?
I think putting up a show is always kind of, it's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of people involved to make it all come together. So it's always, you know, it's always an effort. And it can be difficult and it can be easier. As a woman, there aren't enough female writers out there in all areas, and that includes playwrights. So that was actually one of the reasons I wanted to write this play, was to provide an opportunity to tell a woman's story from a woman's point of view with women actors.
Right. And it's going to premiere here.
Yes, the world premiere is here. I'm very excited. The cast is great. Several of them were students at Morningside. Or were graduates of Morningside. And I'm just very excited because everyone's really enthusiastic about jumping into this unfamiliar territory that I've been living with for a very long time.
And you're working with Shot in the Dark Productions?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So Adam, you're probably pretty psyched about this.
Oh, yes, it is. I think one of our best things that we've done at Shot in the Dark, because it is brand new original works that we're bringing in that you can't see anywhere else. And it's really great that we are able to give opportunities to people to come see the work, to have their work be put on stage. And I think our partnership with Morningside in this is really fantastic as well, because it allows us to focus on the art and not have to worry about finding a space or finding sort of the back end logistics of trying to get a show put on, because there is a fantastic space at Morningside that they've been gracious to partner with us with.
It seems like there's a lot of theater going on in Sioux City. I don't remember having this much going on in the arts when I was growing up here. It seems like it's really seems to be growing over the years.
Yes, there is a ton of fantastic theater in this town. You know, with all three community theaters and Shot in the Dark. And this is our way of doing something different that you can't see at those theaters. And really finding something unique and special that only we're going to be able to do.
Like with the Truman Decision.
Yes, that was our first show in the American Playwrights series. And it was kind of our giant experiment to see if audiences would respond to to an original work, and they did, and it was really fantastic to see all those people show up for a show that was written in Sioux City by somebody from Sioux City, and we put it on, and we decided to expand it, and we're really fortunate that we have Sean here to help us with our second show.
Right. Well, Sean, this play, how many times will it be on here? How many performances?
There are 7 total performances. It opens May 31st with performances that day through June 9th. The evening performances are on the weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then a matinee on Sunday. And our opening gala will be on May 31st.
Wow, it sounds like fun.
It's going to be very fun.
What's your experience been here in Sioux City? You probably have never been here before.
No, I haven't. And I'd like to refer back to what you just said about there being so much theater here. That was the biggest surprise to me. I was pleasantly surprised by that because I didn't really have any frame of reference for Sioux City. And as a, you know, I was a theater major in school. I've always been a theater person. So I thought it was very refreshing to know that, like, you know, it's not the biggest city in the, you know, when you compare it to like New York or LA, but for this community to have so much theater available to it is just great. I love seeing that. I would love it if everyone could come see it. I think it's a really fun show. It's exciting. It's you know, it's got a lot of vitality. It's very youthful. It's for very of this time. And I think it'll be a lot of fun. So I'm just hoping that we get a lot of people out to come see it and share the experience with us.
I think it's a kind of a play, especially not just young people, but young people especially can relate to.
Right. Yeah. It's. I think it's any audience, any age could relate to it. It focuses on a more youthful experience, like people kind of like almost like a coming of age. But everyone has come of age at some point, so it's something I think that everyone can relate to.
That was Shot in the Dark Theater's Adam Goncharowski and playwright and director Sean Serino. She'll direct her play, Rue Royale, at Morningside College's Klinger Neal Theater. It premieres Friday, May 31st, and it runs through June 9th. Listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. Well, we finally found out who's going to be on the Abe stage at Saturday in the Park on July 6th at Grandview Park. And I am here with Steve Smith to talk a little bit about who is going to be there and what they're likely to be playing. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Mary.
Now, the first one on here is Matas Yahu. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, it's his Hasidic name. He's a Hasidic Jew, and he kind of, well, in the hip hop world, there are only so many rapping Hasidic Jewish people. So he was he kind of gained fame back in, I think it was 2005. He came out. He had a top 40 radio hit. Who was kind of a big deal, and he's continued to record. He's put about 5 albums out since then, and he almost got a song on the Olympics. But here's a little bit about how Matas Yahu sounds. He's sort of a socially conscious rap guy. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will rip a hole in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. And that's his song, King Without a Crown. That's the one that got in the top 40. But he also had a song called One Day, which was almost picked up. It was not an official song for the Olympics, but it was featured heavily in the build-up to the Olympics. So he got a lot of play from that as well. Under the moon, I thank God I'm breathing. And I pray, don't take me soon, because I am here for you. Sometimes in my tears I drown. And Abe Stage has kind of been establishing a theme. Last year they had the headliner Arrested Development, which is very socially conscious rap the year before that also. So they've kind of established a theme of kind of socially conscious hip-hop headlining acts over the last two or three years now. So,
yeah, well, there's another one on here I'd not heard of. This, Snow the Product?
Snow the Product. It's a hip-hop act, I think, out of the West Coast. It's a female rapper, and there's a lot of stuff that we can't play from her. Less socially conscious, I guess.
Okay, you know, well, so she's a rapper. What about True Feels?
True Feels, they are an EDM act out of, I guess, originally the Minneapolis Twin Cities area, but they've moved over to Denver. I guess EDM is kind of electronic dance music. is sort of a big thing in the Rockies. So it's EDM sort of party sort of band. We just heard the drop there. That was from a song called Peaks, which they just released last month. So
wow.
Kind of an emerging EDM artist.
You know, I the Abe stage is kind of the stage where everyone's really partying and having a good time. I could just see them now dancing to this, actually.
Yeah. Very good dance music.
Yeah. Let me see. What about Arson City?
Arson City is kind of just more or less a mainstream alternative rock band. I don't know a whole lot about them, but they're kind of familiar and just a straight up kind of rock band.
Artificial Stars.
Artificial Stars. Their homeboys done good. They started out here in Sioux City, and they won the Battle of the Bands at the Marquee, and I don't want to say they've broken up, but they've split apart. One is in Arkansas now, and the other is in Iowa City now. But they still get together, and they still play, and hopefully they're going to be kind of spreading their footprint throughout the Midwest and even into the South. But here's a little bit of what Artificial Stars sound like. Thing about Artificial Stars, they have two guitar players and two songwriters and two singers, so they kind of, their songs will sound a little bit different because completely different viewpoints. They're a nice, tight, kind of funky alternative band.
What about, is it Brady Raps?
Brady Raps and Psychedelic Sidekick, I know absolutely nothing about.
It's a cool name.
But I think they're sort of local. There's also Gallivant, that's a three-piece rock band out of Omaha. Winter Wayfarer, sort of progressive rock out of Lamar's. They've been out here. Colin Hopp is the leader of the band, and he's been out here for fun drives before. Also did a show with them during our recent fund drive a couple of years ago up at the Fruited Plain Cafe in Sioux Center. So they're a really good kind of progressive rock band out of Lamar's.
And the Sioux City Conservatory of Music.
Yeah, Ron and Gia, and I guess they're going to be bringing some of their best students on stage to open everything up first act of the day on the Abe stage.
Now, what about the main stage? Do we know who's going to be on the main stage?
We don't. It's shrouded in mystery.
It is, isn't it?
At least as of this recording.
Is it usually? Do we usually know earlier?
It's a little bit late for the notice. I don't want to speculate, and I don't want to comment on that. So I don't know.
You know, in the past few years, Saturday in the Park has become, it's like it exploded with the people and everyone goes.
Yeah. And especially just in the last, I'd say 3 or 4 years, that second stage has become huge as well. So, I mean, they continue to get great acts on the main stage, but then the second act stage has just really ramped up their game.
I almost feel like they could make it bigger.
Let's go for 3 stages next year.
There you go. Well, Steve, thank you so much for giving us some insight into who's going to be at the Abe stage at Saturday in the Park, and that is July 6th, correct?
Yep, at Grandview Park. And, of course, the Abe stage is right off of the Grandview Boulevard entrance next to the Abraham Lincoln statue.
And that's the rundown for the Abe stage for Saturday in the Park. Saturday in the Park takes place July 6th at Grandview Park in Sioux City. Thank you. You're listening to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett. The Memorial Day weekend is almost here. The holiday was previously known as Decoration Day and originally honored fallen soldiers of the U.S. Civil War. A special exhibit in Spencer, Iowa, takes people back to that time in history. Siouxland Public Media's Sheila Brummer got a tour before opening day a few months ago.
Walking into a wing of the Clay County Heritage Center transports you to a time of turmoil for the United States, starting in April of 1861.
This new exhibit, it's called Boys in Blue, Grand Army of the Republic.
Stephanie Horsley is the director of the center, located in Spencer, Iowa. She shows us items on loan from a museum in Sioux Falls, plus some local additions.
It highlights what the Grand Army of the Republic was, and it was our country's first veterans organization for Civil War veterans. We have a lot of Civil War veterans that came to Clay County in the 1860s and beyond, 1870s and 80s.
When the Civil War ended in 1865, Spencer didn't exist, but the men who moved here made a mark.
So our area of Northwest Iowa and Spencer was fairly young during the Civil War era. And Spencer was officially a town in 1871, so it was still sparsely populated in Clay County. And so there weren't as many men that left from here to go to the war, but there were a lot of men who came after the war who settled in this area with land grants, and they just wanted to get away from, you know, where they used to be. They wanted to have a new start.
Director of Collections at Clay County Heritage, Braden Faleen, estimates the local cemetery is the final resting place for up to 115 soldiers of the Civil War, the bloodiest conflict ever fought on U.S. soil. 5 days after General Robert E. Lee surrendered to General Ulysses S. Grant, an assassin took the life of President Abraham Lincoln. A Civil War soldier's chance of surviving the war? About 1 in 4. More than 618,000 people died at the end of the conflict. Many fallen from disease, others from fighting on the front lines.
We have a small cannonball that would have been fired, and then a 12-pound cannonball that would be fired out, the typical cannon you'd think of. We have a bayonet that would have been used during the time, a sword that was actually made in Germany and then sold to the Army.
Boys in Blue, Grand Army of the Republic, also features biographies connecting generations.
We have a few of our veterans that we talk about. We also have kind of who their relatives are now. So like, for example, Joseph O'Brien, his great-grandson is David Symington, who is involved on the Clay County Fair Board. He's a banker locally, and so a great community involvement from descendants of veterans.
A 4-year period of strife and death and new beginnings brought to life for a modern audience.
I think we could learn a lot by going back.
In Spencer, Iowa, for Siouxland Public Media News, I'm Sheila Brummer.
And that's it for this week's edition of The Exchange. Thanks to Sheila Brummer, Steve Smith, and Mark Munger. We hope you all have a great Memorial Day weekend. We'll see you next week.